The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It was the night before Christmas Eve, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, because they were all watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my colleague, the esteemed professor, Dave Malinsky.
Certainly the ghost of Christmas present driving us today. Coming up on today's show, we're going to show you how to follow the bouncing ball as a most unique NBA season gets underway. We're going to tell you why Bob Huggins came to Las Vegas looking for a 700th win. And that's all he's going to be able to go back with. And from the beaches of Hawaii to the rusty fenders of Detroit, Bowling for Dollars is going to start picking up the pace.
Dave, let's start with a first take on a very busy Friday. And I think you want to go and talk about, a play of the day that didn't quite come through the way it was supposed to yesterday. Talk about it.
Might as well make it the first take because probably very few of you saw it. Here's all you have to do if you're Hawaii to win a play of the day. Throw the ball to one of your players. Any of them. You got four of them on the court. If you missed it, Hawaii scored to take the lead last night with 8 seconds left. Auburn comes right back down. Hawaii didn't get back on defense very well. Comes down, fast break, dunk, 3.5 seconds left. If you're taking 1.5 and you're down one at 3.5 seconds, just get the ball in bounds to one of your own players, and it's almost impossible to lose the bet. There's very little that can go wrong. By the time you get down the court and take a shot, there's not enough time for Auburn to rebound and get fouled. But what happens? Not only did Hawaii not get back on defense to prevent that quick Auburn shot, they threw the ball away. Just enough time left for an Auburn player to get fouled. Free throws are in. Play of the day loses. Good thing most of you would not stay up and see it, or on the East Coast, get up too early to watch it. It would have ruined your breakfast. But that's all right. We've got a lot of winners coming up between now and the end of the bowl games. We hope. Going to be a lot of fun. Teddy, I know our layout's going to be a lot different. What's your take as we get ready for one of the best sports cycles of the year?
Oh, no question. This is going to be a lot of fun over the course of the next week, and you're going to see a little bit of a different show over the next 7 days, let's say. Obviously, quick reminder, we are dark next Monday, the next 2 Mondays, in fact, but there will not be a show the day after Christmas. We're going to go Tuesday through Friday of next week and give you all the information that you need to know for the upcoming bowl games, college hoops, NBA, NFL. Yeah, busy week, no question about it. And when it's a busy week, Dave, that means that we are going to go cut some of the other stuff short. Now, those of you out there in viewer land, you probably don't know what happens behind the scenes here at Vegas Sports Day. And I have to give Mr. Malinsky a lot of credit. When we talk about postmortems, we talk about inside the numbers, we talk about insider six-pack, these are all things that, hey, I'm not going to say I have nothing to do with them, but let's just say that Dave, it's the brains behind the operation.
When I bring the bagels.
Yeah, you bring the bagels once in a while. But the bottom line is a lot of that stuff comes from Malinsky. Not that I have no input, but Dave is the guy that puts the pen to paper and gives us stuff to talk about. When it comes to the next week, however, we're going to skip all that stuff. Forget the inside the numbers. Viewer emails, we're going to answer them in Market Watch at the top of the show. We're going to go in terms of insider six-pack, probably not going to happen. In terms of post-mortems, probably not going to happen. What does that leave us with? Money time. Lots and lots and lots of money time. We're going to break down NBA, college hoops, NFL, college bowls, all of them on a daily basis. So get prepared. Lots of game analysis, not much gambling theory. This is a show that talks a lot about gambling theory when we have time. But over the course of the next 7 days, hey, let's break down some games because I know you guys are out there and interested. And let's start, of course, today with a little Market Watch segment. Again, we're going to cover every bowl game individually over the course of the bowl season. That means time allotted for each one of them. And now we've got NBA to talk about. Dave, with NBA, initially, we're going to start in terms of our betting units, a little bit light, but that's not going to last very long.
We've got a lot of email questions asking us about future books for the NBA this year, and we understand them. In a wide open season, you might want to search for that value. We haven't done anything with it. And here's why. Based on our charting right now, at least half the teams in the league do not have the roster right now they expect to have just a few weeks into the season. They're all scrambling a little bit. Some are intentionally leaving a little bit of room to make moves as the season goes on. You look at that Dallas rotation at center. No, you're not going to win a championship with that. Mark Cuban knows you're not going to win a championship with it. But he knows he's got time to maneuver and make deals. So what we might see is, in some ways, this an NBA season might look like college basketball. Your goal is to get to the playoffs. Make sure you have enough in play right now to win enough games to get to the playoffs. And then make your trades and make your moves as the season progresses. So we've done nothing with the future book so far. But when the games themselves get underway, we're going to jump in there pretty good. We see some teams that are going to be way ahead in terms of development as opposed to others. So there's going to be a lot happening game by game, but not from a future standpoint.
And this is one season, Dave, where when I look at my level of preparation for the upcoming NBA campaign, I'm not looking at past data one iota. I don't care what a team did last year. I don't care how they looked. I don't care how promising they were. I don't care about any of that stuff because, frankly, it's not going to matter. And what you're going to see in the first month of the campaign, you're going to see a lot of point spreads set based on last year's squads, based on last year's results, because that's what they have to do. When you're looking at hard math formulas and you don't have any data from this year, what do? You go back to last year. And that's where you get your initial data sets to create those opening power ratings. So you're going to see a focus in the numbers on stuff that's completely irrelevant. Again, around the league, roster after roster after roster, don't look anything like they looked at the end of last year. You're going to see new faces and new places, new coaches, new systems, teams that are in shape to start the regular season, teams that are out of shape to start the regular season, teams that get it, teams that don't. None of that has anything to do with what happened last year. So if you're relying on long-term data sets, throw them in the garbage right now. There's going to be money to made, but there's going to be money to be made. You're going to have to concentrate on what's going on right from the get-go. And then perhaps even take advantage of some of the overreactions if teams come out red hot or ice cold.
So here's what you're going to expect to hear from us in the days ahead. And we'll start in Money Time today. We're going to break down a couple of the key games on Sunday. Matchups, who's in shape, who's ready to play and who isn't, what are some of the technical issues one coach might be able to take advantage of against the other. But we're not going to say, oh yeah, this team went 5-1 as a dog last year. This team won twice in this other team's court last year. No, at this point, everyone starts on a relatively level playing field, level in that no one's had to go through this before. This quick prep time with only two exhibition games, this is new for everybody. So I think it's going to be a brand new season. There are going to be better opportunities in the first week and a half of this NBA season than maybe at any time to open any season in our lifetime. We're going to be there for them starting on this Sunday. It's going to come up in our second market watch, our second, not market watch, Money Time segment today. We promise, though, even though we're going to do Money Time in three segments, Teddy's only going to yell at once.
I appreciate that, Dave. But, you know, the bottom line, when you're talking about the best strategies for taking advantage of the early season NBA, be aware of emerging situations. Be aware of emerging developments. Be aware of teams that aren't supposed to be very good, but suddenly come out of the gate and they look like they know what they're doing and they're winning some games and they're covering some point spreads and the market's not catching up. It's all about the emerging status, not the way things are supposed to be, not the way things theoretically are going to be, what teams are stepping up right now and what teams may go through some semblance of struggles early on.
So that's going to be the big part of the focus, you know, for the NBA. College baskets, they're going to be coming back up next Tuesday. A lot of big tournament action. We think we've got a winner right down the street in the colleges today. And note, when we come back next week, not only all those bowl games, but some of the major college conferences get underway. Big East, Big Ten, Pac-12. You've got some terrific games on the board, so it's going to be quite a ride coming up.
Oh, yeah. Bottom line is you guys better tune in every day next week and tell your friends and tell your family and tell everyone, because this is your show, and we're going to do our best to deliver all the information you need to know. And let's start with giving you a way to contact us. Real easy, the email address, sportsday@covers.com. Questions, comments, queries, critiques, whatever you like to let us know, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, at Vegas Sports Day, and you can get involved in the Covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going right now. Let your voice be heard. Covers.com/postingforum.
When we come back, we're going to head out to the islands for a nice warm Christmas Eve. Bowling for Dollars gets underway. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
If I only get to shout it once, I better make it a good one, right? It's money time! That always cracks me up. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Christmas Eve and the Hawaii Bowl in Honolulu. We've got Southern Miss -8.5 over Nevada, total of 63. And one thing we've done throughout the course of the show this week, we've talked about some of the off-field issues for Southern Miss. Yes, they have found a new head coach. Yes, Larry Fedora did travel with the team to Hawaii and will coach them for this game. But perhaps there are some other lingering issues with Southern Miss that we haven't fully fleshed out yet, Dave.
Somehow the markets think everything's fine at Southern Miss. There's been a boatload of money showing up in the last 24 hours or so. This game was sitting 6 and 6.5 for about 2 weeks after it was opened. Major money coming into Southern Miss. We disagree with that money a little bit. You know, we've dealt with the Southern Miss issues already on this show. The Nevada side brings a fascination here. First of all, for the Southern Miss kids, you can get out in Honolulu, get on the beach, have a little bit of fun, maybe relax a bit. This is business for Nevada. It's the third trip in 4 years since Hawaii's a conference member. They're used to making this trip every other year. But look at that last bowl trip here. A game where Chris Ault thought he just lost complete control of his team coming in. SMU, a nondescript team as a big underdog, wiped out Nevada 45-10. A much different focus from Nevada this time around. Especially think about the experience of this squad. The defense has nothing but upperclassmen starting. Most of those guys were on the field for that embarrassment. So there's a different focus to go out and win this game. And it looks like they can. Southern Miss is dynamic offensively, but not that strong on defense, especially if you want to run right at them. They're quick. They're not tough. Look at this balance Nevada brings to do that. That pistol can attack you right between the tackles. It opens up play-action passing. Nevada this year, the only team in the nation to average over 250 yards a game, running and passing both. Against a defense that's a little soft in the trenches, gets you in the hunt +8.5 for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah, and remember, this is a Nevada team that came into the season. They were in full rebuilding mode. They lost a lot of talent off of last year's dynamic squad, breaking in a new quarterback. They had injuries at QB. So it wasn't like, if you look at a full year statistical profile of Nevada, that you're going to see the same team that's on the field on Saturday night. Nevada's better now than they were in September, significantly so. And we also saw in breaking news over the last 24 hours, Rishard Matthews, their wide receiver threat who's been so dynamic this year. He has been upgraded. He's going to play on Saturday, and that gives the Wolfpack a real weapon, perhaps, if they need to even come through the back door in this one.
Okay, you've unwrapped all your presents. Now it's Monday. Let's get bowling into next week. Let's go to Shreveport for the Independence Bowl. Right now, seeing Missouri at -5, total of 53 over North Carolina. A line that surprised us a little bit because we don't see a talent gap between these programs that necessarily calls for a 5. Where there's a perception out there, and this will be the big issue on this game, the North Carolina focus. They've been through a lot this year. Butch Davis, head coach, gone before the season started. Everett Withers, the interim coach, already announced he's off to Ohio State as soon as this one's over. Larry Fedora will be coming in. The Carolina players don't know him very well. So we've been trying to follow the Carolina psyche very closely. And we find it interesting. Here's a couple of quotes that we think may matter here. First, wide receiver Eric Highsmith says, "The past couple of weeks, we've been practicing hard. You know," then he goes, "Fedora is going to come in and watch and see who's who and what they can do. Of course, this bowl game is really our audition for him. Matters a lot because you got 14 underclassmen who'll be starting for Carolina." Let's go to another one of them. Kareem Jackson, starting defensive end. "He's acquiring a lot of talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. We're bringing back our whole offensive line, quarterback, and a big bulk of our receivers. So that'll help, especially with him coming in with the spread attack." So we already hear North Carolina kids being proactive, talking about next year. Maybe the attitude's a little more intense here than what the markets are trying to tell us.
Yeah, and when we look at this Missouri team, I mean, you look at the victories the Tigers had this season. Let's see, they beat Miami of Ohio, unimpressive. That was back in early September. Western Illinois, of course, was the seventh win. And then in conference play, they knocked off Iowa State. Oh, and by the way, they beat Iowa State 52-17. Iowa State's the team that got the Big 12's last bid. Missouri shut out by the Big 12 Bulls. They had to get this as an, quote-unquote, at-large bid. So a little bit of, I don't know, revenge from the Big 12 for Missouri walking away? Maybe, but maybe something to give the Tigers a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. But the win over Iowa State, they beat a Texas A&M team that was very flawed and found a way to lose a lot of games. They came close to Baylor, lost that game by only three, but lost nonetheless. Closed out the season with a three-game stretch, beating Texas, Texas Tech, and Kansas to earn this particular bowl bid. But when you go through that list of teams that Missouri beat, you're not walking away saying, wow, this team was a juggernaut. That being said, the Tigers did get better as the season progressed. Their own young quarterback, James Franklin, certainly had a much better second half than he did over the first half. And Gary Pinkle continues to be a coach who impresses me with his ability to prepare defense. And there's one thing about this North Carolina team. The defense was real good. For much of the season, the offense was a little bit spotty.
You know, one thing that did cause a little bit of a run-up on this line earlier last week, leading receiver Dwight Jones for North Carolina was suspended for a couple of days. An image of him was used to help promote a New Year's Eve party in the area. But that suspension has been lifted now, so it looks like all hands are on deck. Plus five has us leaning a little bit, but come Monday, plus six, we might get to the windows with it. Again, one of the things we'll do for a lot of these bowls is give you what the strike point would be. Keeping in mind, on a standalone game like this, if you just leave it out there, you could see late money to the favorite. That's the way the patterns tend to be. Keep that in mind because you might see Nevada as high as nine on Christmas Eve. At plus six on Monday, we've got a little Carolina in our pocket.
Let's go to Tuesday afternoon in Detroit with the Little Caesars Bowl. This game's going to be going on while we're on air next Tuesday, I believe, Dave. So instead of watching the game, it's only going to be the first quarter anyway. Watch us. But we'd rather give the information right now before that game kicks off. And right now we have Purdue minus 2.5, total 60.5 against Western Michigan. And yesterday on this show we brought up some of the issues with Purdue. Let me clear some of that up because we do have some clarification today. Gerald Gooden, Will Lucas, the two defensive starters who got arrested earlier this week.
Your two favorite players.
Absolutely. I love those guys, man. Trying to rip that boot off of their car thanks to the meter maid writing too many parking tickets. Well, yeah, they were arrested. They've also been cleared to play. Purdue's taking this game seriously. They want to get those two guys on the field. So there were questions whether they were going to be eligible. Both guys are expected to start for Purdue. But, Dave, this team still has some other significant concerns in terms of injuries and suspensions to deal with.
Yeah, you know what would be fun Tuesday?
What's that?
Scott gets that 42-inch screen he thinks he's getting for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
We'll be able to watch the game.
Cool. I know, but there'll be lots of the problem with watching games live is that you end up lots of awkward silences in there. You know, you're like, every once in a while you punctuate, get in the end zone, get in the end zone. You know, it just doesn't make for a good show flow.
Not when it's that loud. No, no.
Everything I do is loud, Dave. What do you want me to do?
Okay, I hear the problems Purdue still does have. Everything's loud. It's Christmas. We got to let that go. middle linebacker Dwayne Beckford, the leading tackler, suspended. He's not going to play. O.J. Ross, the number three receiver with 33 catches. He's not going to play. And Ralph Bolden, their best running back, tore an ACL in the final game. He's not going to play. So it still is a depleted Purdue team, but at least the defense isn't stretched as bad as it could have been. That defense matters here because they don't have a lot of speed. They're going to need all the depth they can because on a fast surface, this Western Michigan offense could be a handful.
Oh, they certainly can. You look at Alex Carter, the Broncos quarterback. He looks good. and expected to go on Tuesday after missing the final game with a separated shoulder. Of course, the game he missed, Tyler Van Tubbergen, one of my favorite names in college football, came in and threw 6 touchdown passes against Akron. So we have to give these receivers some credit. And, of course, a leading receiver, Jordan White, this kid's something special. He will play at the next level. He had 127 catches this season at the college level, 127 catches. That's hard to do. Robert Arnheim, Kleb Ravenal caught 59 apiece. Western has their share of weapons when it comes to throwing the ball downfield. But one thing the Broncos have not done well in recent years is step up in class against BCS-caliber competition. They did beat UConn this year, 38-31, but it's worth noting that the 31 points that the Huskies scored in that ballgame were close to their season high, and UConn, not really a bowl team this year. Well, they weren't a bowl team, plain and simple. So the Broncos defensively have had some issues, but boy, this offense certainly capable of putting up points in bunches.
When we come back, the NBA starts playing for keeps, and we start breaking it down for you. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Let's go right across town to the Orleans Arena. We're here in Vegas. The least we can do is talk about Vegas games. And this one could be a lot of fun tonight. Baylor, -5.5 against West Virginia. And boy, the Mountaineers, they did it again. We saw them do it at Kansas State, refused to lose. Did it again last night, rallying from behind to get the overtime victory over Missouri State. But in order to get that win, Dave, boy, a little bit of depth issues now for West Virginia. 45 minutes for Darryl Bryant, 45 minutes for Kevin Jones last night. That's right, they played every minute of the game. Less than 24 hours later, they got to go again, this time against an even tougher foe.
And it gets even harder for them. Now, we had sort of set this game up a little bit on yesterday's show when we talked about the idea of depth in these tournaments. Dennis Kalichli, their only real low post scorer, suffered a hip pointer. From what we've heard locally this morning, he's not going to play. That's a big blow for them because they're not very deep at that position. They're also down Pat Forsythe up front. He's got back spasms, unlikely to play. It's so bad tonight that we might actually see Dominic Rutledge on the court. And we bring that up because look at Bob Huggins' own quote about Rutledge. The problem with Dom is he just doesn't know anything. He missed so much stuff because of the knee, and he doesn't understand conceptually what we're doing. But he is athletic, so hopefully we can get him in the right place. So here's the idea tonight. Huggins got win number 700 last night. Great milestone in his career. His team got a win that they really needed for NCAA tournament status later. Could Huggins' attitude be, you know what, this is a tough matchup for us. We may not win this game. I don't want to force some of these starters out there off of 45 minutes that hard. I'm shallow up front. Let me experiment just a little bit with this one because it's a tough matchup. Baylor is one of the better defensive teams in the country. They got some shot blockers, and they'll give you a lot of zone looks. That means they're a difficult team to prepare for when you don't get a chance to prepare. And understand this, when you've got one of these tournaments with 4 games taking place at a site, there's no time for a shoot-around. So all the Mountaineers are going to be able to do is watch a little bit of film, and that's it. That could be dangerous against a team like Baylor.
Oh, yeah, and Baylor's certainly going to come into this game much fresher than West Virginia. Perry Jones III, the only player for Baylor who went more than 26 minutes in their 13-point win over St. Mary's last night. And, boy, you have to like this team chemistry for Baylor. They're unselfish. They're really sharing the basketball. Here's a quote from Quincy Miller. Quote, "We don't care who scores. We're trying to share the ball. We just try to get everyone in the game. We just want to get everyone involved. We just want to win." And, of course, Baylor, looking at a top-5 ranking right now, that's all they've done this year, is find ways to win. And that team just keeps getting better and better. And the defense, you talked about the zone looks that Baylor gives, not going to be an easy defense to prepare for with a little bit of film study and no practice time.
You might be watching Miracle on 34th Street sometime over the holidays. So what's the best thing to do on Christmas Day? Let's go to 33rd Street. Madison Square Garden, New York Knicks opening. Right now it looks like about a 3.5-point favorite against Boston. This is a Paul Pierce outline, it appears. Pierce did not play in either one of the Boston preseason games. He's dealing with a heel injury. Difficult for Boston because they don't have a whole lot behind him. You're looking at Sasha Pavlovich, Marquise Daniels, not a lot of depth at that position. But look at how different they were in those two exhibition games against Toronto. They took 14 three-pointers in the two games combined. That's what they tended to average for a single game. So one of the conundrums we'll start with. Some people are saying, well, you want the veteran teams at the start of the season to have a better chemistry. Well, now this Boston chemistry is disrupted a little bit. And do some of these veterans, like a Garnett, a Pierce, a Ray Allen, do they need a little more time because they're older to get into a playing shape? Forget about the psychological part. Will they physically be ready as early as some younger players would be?
Yeah, because some of the guys, some of the veterans were out on some of these barnstorming tours. You know, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, guys who were getting into game shape by traveling around the country. For Boston, you talk about Pierce and Garnett, you know, they were in suits arguing with the with the league suits if in terms of the NBA. So that could certainly be an issue for Boston. But, I mean, the Knicks have their own issues. This is a team that hasn't played a lick of defense at any point in the last 5 years. Mike D'Antoni, who's got a great system with the appropriate point guard. This is who the Knicks have at the point right now. Tony Douglas and Mike Bibby, two guys that Rondo can run circles around. Even when the Douglas or Bibby bring their A game, and I don't think Bibby has an A game anymore, and I don't know that Douglas ever had an A game to begin with. So there are certainly some legitimate issues here for the New York Knicks, but they may well have Carmelo Anthony playing some quote-unquote point forward, kind of like the role that Lamar Odom used to play for the Lakers, where he could distribute the basketball. And, of course, without Pierce in the lineup, the Celtics lack that shutdown defender against Melo in the fourth quarter of this one, because this one has all the makings of a game that comes down to who can execute their offense better during crunch time. And the Knicks may have something of an edge with the natural scores they have on that roster.
It's going to be fascinating to watch the Knicks in the early stages, because not only has Anthony been running the half-court offense, he's been bringing the ball up the court in some of these preseason games. Now, that's half smart, because he's a guy who will compete to win. He's a good distributor. It's good for some parts of his game. But then how will that impact his shooting? Will that extra load of having to run the offense take a little bit away from him? Defensively, there's a chance to be a lot better because now you've got Chandler playing center. You can move Stoudemire over to power forward, gives you a couple of shot blockers there. But can this Knick chemistry come together? It's going to be a great game to watch. I'm not sure this is a game we're going to be able to get into our pockets.
Let's go to Sunday afternoon in Dallas, and this is the matchup. Yeah, this is the matchup we've all been waiting for. It's a rematch of the NBA Finals, and we have the Miami Heat -4 on the road in Dallas. This is kind of a head-scratcher line when we consider the fact that the Mavericks last year in the NBA Finals, they closed -2.5, -1, and -3 in their three home games against the Heat. Now they're +4, and Dallas isn't that much worse than they were last year. Is Miami that much better? How has the line moved 7 points from the end of last year to the beginning of this year? We talk about these two squads, Dave.
We can see a couple of things. One, of course, the anticipation that the Marcos would flock to Miami revenge. Miami, though, hasn't gotten that much better in the offseason. They're talking about wanting to run more. But we heard that last year. We want to run. We want to get into the open court. The problem is you need a distributor at point guard to push that tempo. Far too many times when Miami was running last year, it was Wade or LeBron James having to deal with the basketball. That slows you down. That bogs you down. You want those guys on the wings to finish, but that magical point guard still isn't there. But it gets easier to finish against Dallas than it was in the playoffs. Chandler gone. Brendan Haywood not only having to start, but who's behind him? Ian Mahimney? That's really odd to start the season with. That's when we talked about these futures earlier in the show. Mark Cuban knows this team is good enough to compete for a championship again. He knows he doesn't have the players at center to win it. He's looking to get them over the course of the year instead of forcing a move right now. The one negative, though, that we have seen from Dallas in the preseason, Dirk Nowitzki, not in shape yet. That's a big, big factor because if it's a close game late on Sunday, he's going to have to carry that load.
Yeah, and for the Miami Heat, guess what? Mike Miller's hurt again. He's not going to play in the opener. They will, however, have Udonis Haslem, who has been such an underrated interior force for that team over the years. Haslem, good to go for the opener. And just one more point when it comes to point spread value. We talked about what the lines were last year, and I said at the start of the show, don't look at last year's numbers, but you have to in this instance. Miami, at home against Dallas last year, Same point spread in the postseason. They were -4, -4.5, -5 in all three home games. Now they're laying that same price in Dallas. So I don't think this is where we're going to go for our Vegas Sports Day play of the day, Dave. Is it?
No, we got to put some basketball in your stockings, and it won't come from Sunday's NBA. Although if we see the right line, Lakers-Bulls, there is some potential there. But let's go down the street. Let's look to those Baylor Bears. We talked about them on yesterday's show. Team with a great chemistry, tough team to match up against. They're deeper than West Virginia. They're more athletic. They make their free throws better. This 5.5, not a bad line to lay. And again, we think Baylor can wear West Virginia out in the second half. So if you're heading over to the Orleans Arena today, go to the sportsbook first. Maybe see if Bob Scucci's there. Say hello. Baylor, -5.5, our play of the day on the basketball hardwoods.
And that's the way it should be everywhere, Dave. That's exactly the way it should be everywhere, because I'll tell you what, the concept of going and placing a bet in the sports book and then going to watch the game in the same venue, I like that concept. When we come back, Money Time is going to shift to the NFL. It's the National Football League. We're going to break it down for you right here on Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Yeah, it's more Money Time, this time NFL style, and we're going to go right to East Rutherford, New Jersey, which is not quite as nice as 33rd Street in Manhattan, but, you know, I know all the New Yorkers out there, you know, you like East Rutherford for some reason. I'm not a big fan of that town. Right now, the Jets, -3, 45.5 the total, and Dave, maybe I'm scratching my head on this one, but are they factoring in a full home field edge for the Jets, even though the Giants will be sleeping in their own beds as well?
It's odd that you would give that much weight for just the fans themselves, especially for teams like this. You know, fans aren't going to bother the Giants that much. They've actually been a good road team under Tom Coughlin, so that line is artificially high. But what a battle of egos here. Some of the trash talking this week, just about as good as anything that we've seen in the NFL all year, and that's what happens when you're focused as much on beating each other as making a playoff run, because neither team looks good enough to get where they thought they were going to go. The problem is neither does what they wanted to do best. Who's dead last in the NFL in rushing this year? The Giants. Team that wants to run the ball, wants to control things to the line of scrimmage a little bit. They've been outrushed by 580 yards and 1.1 yards per attempt. But look at the Jets. They want to be tough at the line of scrimmage under Ryan? No. Opponents have more rushing yards per attempt, more rushing touchdowns, and the opponents have a higher sack percentage. Neither of these teams do what they're supposed to do well. So when we do want to find a winner, there's that little line value for the artificial price. But could there be something at quarterback, Teddy, that might also really matter?
I mean, Manning versus Sanchez is a mismatch. Mark Sanchez, highly touted, highly rated, came out of USC, went to the Jets, and has basically... His good games, he's mediocre. His bad games, he stinks. I mean, there's no sugarcoating that Mark Sanchez has not developed into the quarterback the Jets hoped that he would be. This is his third full season as a starter. The Jets have been in the playoff. Heck, they've been to the AFC Championship game each of the last 2 years. But it's come despite Sanchez, not because of Sanchez. This year, again, an inability to read defenses correctly, and there's at least 4 or 5 throws in every game where if you have a Jets stick in your pocket, you're like, oh, my God, don't. Oh, it was incomplete. You know, I mean, Sanchez does that every game multiple times. Eli Manning's been good this year. Boy, he's been really good. He's been good in the fourth quarter. He's been good at getting his team to rally around him. And he's put the ball right on the money despite a banged-up offensive line, despite, as you mentioned, Dave, that running game that ranks number 32, dead last in the NFL at rushing the football. And despite the fact that his receivers had the dropsies all year, Manning has still put the Giants in position to win. And if this game comes down to which quarterback can make a play in the fourth quarter, I want the dog here, not the favorite.
Let's shift to Detroit, where the Lions are a 2.5-point favorite over San Diego, total of 52. We've talked about the Charger surge a little bit on the show earlier this week. Here they come again in the late season. North Turner, not necessarily a guy that motivates his team well or gets into play with passion, but a chess master who has an excellent end game. Give him a competent group of 11 players on offense, he will mold something special towards the end of the season. Since taking over in San Diego in regular season games after December 1st, about 20-2 straight up, 15-6-1 against the spread. Difficulties in the middle of this season when the offensive line was really beat up, but they managed to patch that line together a little bit. And could we make a case that in the 3 weeks of December, has San Diego been the best team in the NFL?
Well, it's hard to say because their quality of competition hasn't been as good as some other teams. Two of the three wins that the Chargers have been able to put together this month have come against lesser-tier foes. But there was nothing fraudulent about last Sunday night's win against the Baltimore Ravens. The Chargers were the better team on the field start to finish. And what was particularly impressive in that ball game was not just what the offense did against Baltimore. You know, Baltimore's got a good defense. And San Diego moved the ball into scoring position. I believe it was the first seven drives of the game. Every one of them a scoring drive. One time they missed a field goal. But got points on six of those seven drives. And that's a good defense they did it against. Lions defense, not so good. You know, still can't stop the run. 5.2 yards per carry. But the other thing with San Diego, besides the offensive acumen, their defense has stepped up. Over the course of the last month, they've held each of their last four foes to 16 points or less. So San Diego getting it done on both sides of the football right now. Detroit, maybe not so much, Dave, huh?
Yeah, we talked about the San Diego momentum. Detroit's gone 3-3 since their bye. But go back and look at those games closer. The three losses, all in double figures. But look at how precarious the three wins were. A home game against Carolina tied with less than 3 minutes to play before they pulled that one out. A home win over Minnesota that took every bit of a +5 turnover advantage to the last play, and then a missed face mask call, which led to a 6th turnover. If that face mask call is made, it's first and goal for Minnesota, one play left to win a game at a -5. You go back and review the game at Oakland last week, you almost make a case it was more Oakland losing the game than Detroit winning it. Yeah, Lions hanging in there in the playoff hunt, but that's all. They haven't really stepped their game up.
Let's go to Christmas Eve. Oh, no, Christmas night. Christmas Eve's tomorrow. Christmas night on Sunday. This is the only NFL game to be played on Sunday this week. And that, of course, the Green Bay Packers -12.5, total 43.5. And we've seen money come in on the under in this ballgame over the course of the last 24 hours. And you can understand why. We look at Chicago right now. Let's see. No Jay Cutler, no Matt Forte, no Johnny Knox, no Marion Barber, Marion Barber's not going this week. What do they have to work with on offense right now? Not so much.
So we talked about Norv Turner being a chess master. Mike Martz, it's not even checkers. You're kind of down to tic-tac-toe. There's nothing. There's just nothing there. Forte and Knox were the two best receivers. Forte and Barber, the two best runners. Cutler was having one of the best seasons of his career. And here's the problem. When you talk about tweaking your playbook, the Bears have gone out of their way this year to get better blocking tight ends because they wanted to be able to get Forte out to the edges a little bit better. That was working. Forte was having a Pro Bowl season. But now the flip side of that, your tight ends dead last in the NFL in receptions. So you don't have anywhere to go to tweak this offense. We can't throw the ball down the field to Knox. We don't have running backs to carry the load. We can't adjust and go to the tight ends. And oh, by the way, Josh McCown is going to have to get the start at quarterback. So they are so incredibly limited. But you know what? If you look at the Packer defense, if you do want to pack a group together, say, we just want to try to dink and dunk, look at these Green Bay numbers. 302 first downs allowed. 5,569 yards allowed. 6.2 yards per play. Is it possible that Mike Martz maybe can't find a way to get to the end zone, but can hang in the game by finding ways to make first downs against a defense that leaves a lot of holes?
And this Packer offense, there are issues right now, big issues. Obviously, we know about the loss of Greg Jennings. That's the thing that's seemed to have gotten the headlines. But the real issue for Green Bay is on the offensive line, where they're playing musical chairs. We did a postmortem earlier in the week talking about all the injuries the Packers have suffered on that OL over the course of the last couple of weeks, or really just last week against Kansas City. It's a patchwork unit right now. So we have a great quarterback in Aaron Rodgers who's needs to concentrate on the postseason, needs to be healthy, much like Big Ben in Pittsburgh. You know, Aaron Rodgers, it's more about staying healthy right now than it is about winning games, or certainly winning them by margin. So with Rodgers behind a banged-up offensive line minus his best receiver, maybe we see the Packers run the ball a little bit more this week. Not going to be a nice day. It's going to be frozen tundra at Lambeau Field on Sunday night, and you can understand why some of this money's come in expecting a relatively low-scoring ball game.
Maybe some fun with props on Christmas night. You know, so many of the props will also be based upon those Green Bay run-pass ratios. Look for some Green Bay running backs there. And once you've cashed those prop tickets, we go to Monday night in the Superdome. Maybe they save the best for last on this week's NFL board, the way these teams match up against each other. New Orleans, 6.5, 52 over Atlanta. Four consecutive meetings in this series decided by 3 points, two of them going to overtime, including an earlier New Orleans 26-23 win at Atlanta earlier this season. We're talking about trash talking between the Jets and Giants. Similar things between these two. These teams fiercely compete against each other. Almost make that 6.5 look a little bit high.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when we look at the series history, it does, but not when you look at what the Saints have done at home this year. This team has been absolutely special in the Super Bowl. Here are the results. 30-13 over Chicago. 40, and that was when the Bears were good, not the current version of Chicago Bears. 40-33 against another playoff team, the Houston Texans. They beat Indy 62-7. You know, that same Colts team that bit us in the ass last night. They beat Tampa Bay 27-16. They beat the Giants, another playoff-contending team, 49-24. Detroit, another playoff-contending team, 31-17. So, yeah, that's every win by a touchdown or more. Five of the six wins by double-digit margins. They've been annihilating teams on this field. Drew Brees didn't get sacked in the first meeting between these two teams. Atlanta will have a healthy John Abraham this time around. They didn't have the first time, but Brees, for the season, has done a remarkable job at avoiding pressure, getting rid of the football in time to avoid those hard hits. And, of course, with Darren Sproles, I mean, really underrated season for Sproles this year. 496 yards rushing at 6.5 yards per carry. That's unbelievable. And then, of course, 79 catches, 5 touchdowns, receiving 659 receiving yards. Sproles has been a do-everything back for this Saints team, and it may make it difficult for that Falcons defense to counter.
If there is an advantage Atlanta has, though, it's the fact that they know this New Orleans offense. A lot of those games Teddy talked about, those blowouts, non-division teams, not accustomed to the way New Orleans plays, not accustomed to being in that dome. And it matters because Atlanta plays their home games in a dome, so even the dome itself doesn't lead to matchup problems for them. They've got emerging talents of their own. Julio Jones is becoming who they wanted him to become. 42 catches this year, but at 18 yards per reception, that really opens up a lot of room for White, opens up room for Gonzalez, makes it a much more dynamic Atlanta offense. So they believe that they can trade points. But here's the fascinating element of this game. You look at Sproles, you look at Brees, you look at Matty Ryan, look at all those Atlanta weapons, you look at Michael Turner. That total gets out there at 52 and liable to go up a little bit. Again, here's your Monday night standalone where money can trickle into the over. We did an earlier Inside the Numbers segment about a month ago on how New Orleans tends to play contrary to the perception because the lines get set so high. How about the last 4 years in division play, 15-7 to the under? It's much more ball control against division opponents. Atlanta's not going to let them beat them deep. A little more ball control going on here. And if you're the Falcons, you really know your best defense is to keep Brees off the field. That means a lot of running Turner early in the game. Yeah, we know going under 52 is not the most fun type of bet to make. But look at this series. If you take away one overtime, it's been four straight unders as well in these head-to-heads. So if this line drips up a little bit, 52 becomes a clear win number. Yeah, not the easiest thing to root for, but 52.5, 53, a little bit of under in our Monday night pockets. But it's not the best we have this week. Something much better that we'll have in our pockets and cashed before Santa Claus comes in on Sunday morning. Teddy, what's that going to be?
Oh, yeah. Vegas Sports Day play of the day for Saturday, Christmas Eve. We're going to take our shot with, yeah, the San Diego Superchargers plus 2.5 at Detroit. Chargers plus 2.5. Don't think we're going to see threes on this game, but it's not going to hurt you to wait and find out. But we'll go with the current line right now. Chargers plus 2.5. I think it's a game. Well, that's, what are they, 20-2 straight up? I think they can get to 21 and two straight up in December and January in the Norv Turner era. Take the Chargers plus the points, maybe a taste on the money line. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And that's going to wrap it up, folks. That's all we got for the upcoming holiday weekend. I want to wish each and every one of you a very Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, a Happy Kwanzaa, whatever it is that you celebrate, celebrate it with those you love. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the games. Best of luck. We'll be back to see you again on Tuesday. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Ta-ta!